Today's shiur is Masechet Gittin Daf Nun Ches. We will begin on Daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis at the end of the bottom line. It says the Gemara, Omer Rabba Babachana, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Aboim saw Ketzutzei Tefillin, 40 saw of Tefillin cases, of Tefillin, Nimtzu Beroish Harugei Beter, were found on the heads of those that were killed that we discussed in the previous shiur in Beitah. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yishmol Omer, Shalosh Kupis, Shalaboyim Abom Saw. There were three boxes of tefillin casings. Each box contained 40 saw. The Masnitzatana, in the Brisa we learned, Abom Kupis, there were 40 boxes, each box containing Shalosh saw and three saw. So as the Gemara now is pointing out, the last two opinions really have the same amount, the amount being 120 saw. It's only a question how we got to 120 saw. Is it 40 times 3 or is it 3 times 40? However, the first opinion holds that there were 40 saw only of tefillin. And the question is there a machloikas here or is there a way of explaining this difference of opinion? Says the Gemara v'loi pligi, there really is no machloikas here. Hadereisha, the Braisa that speaks about 120 saw is referring to the tefillin shel Rosh. Hadadaro, the Braisa that's speaking about 120 saw is the tefillin shel Rosh. The Braisa that speaks about only 40 saw is referring to the tefillin shel Yad. Because, as Rashi explains, the tefillin shel Yad and tefillin shel Rosh both contain four parashiyos. But in the tefillin shel Yad, all four of those parashiyos are written on one klaf. In Tefillin Shel Rosh, they're written in four separate klafim that are put into four separate compartments. Therefore, the Tefillin Shel Rosh are larger than the Tefillin Shel Yad, and that's why the sheer, the amount of Tefillin Shel Rosh was much more than Tefillin Shel Yad. However, in learning this Gemara, there are two questions. One question is that the Braisa, even the first Braisa that speaks about 40 saw, which now is saying is referring to the tefillin shel Yad, if we look at the wording of the Braisa, the top words of our Amid, it says, Abom saw ktsutzei tefillin nimtzu b'roish harugei beter. So we see that this is also referring to the tefillin shel Rosh. So to that, many mefarshim explain that since it was a time of war, and many people were carrying weapons, the halacha is that in those times they wore tefillin all day. But when they wore tefillin shel Yad, if they had to carry something, they would put the tefillin shel Yad on their heads. And therefore, even though the first Braisa, the Braisa that speaks about 40 saw, is referring to the tefillin shel Yad, they were on the rush, they were on the head, because they were carrying weapons in their hands. However, the question that still does remain is that we know that the difference in size between the tefillin shel Yad and tefillin shel Rosh, we all Baruch Hashem wear tefillin every day, is not that significant. So how can we explain that the tefillin shel Rosh is so much larger than the tefillin shel Yad? So the Gra explains that actually it's just the opposite. The Braisa that speaks about the tefillin, the 120 saw tefillin, is referring to the tefillin shel Yad, and the Braisa that speaks about 40 saw is referring to the tefillin shel Rosh. Because the Gra explains there are many more situations where one is wearing the tefillin shel Yad versus he's wearing the tefillin shel Rosh. Because we know that when we put on the tefillin, first we put on the tefillin shel Yad, and only then do we put on the tefillin shel Rosh. Then, while we're wearing the tefillin, we wear both the tefillin shel Yad and tefillin shel Rosh. And then, when we take off the tefillin, we first take off the tefillin shel Rosh, and then only afterwards do we take off the tefillin shel Yad. So the first Braisa that speaks about tefillin that they were wearing on the head is only referring to that one situation where they're wearing both the tefillin shel Rosh and tefillin shel Yad, which is only one of the three scenarios that we described. However, the second Braisa that speaks about 120 saw is referring to the tefillin shel yad, which there are two more situations where one would possibly wear the tefillin shel yad and not be wearing the tefillin shel rosh. Says the Gemara, Amar Rev Asi, Abba Kabin Moyach Nimtzu 11 Achas. Four kava brains were found on one stone. Ula Amar, Ula says, Tisha Kabin. Amar Rev Kahana Vitemish Ilba Meri, Mikra, where do we see this in the Pasuk? Says the Gemara, Bas Bavala Shduda, Asher Shi Shalom Loch, we will pay back the Bavloim, Asher Shi Yoyfech, Shoyches Venipech as Olaich Lasela. We will clutch and dash your infants against the rock, that eventually, when we take revenge in the Bavloim, they will have their heads bashed against the rocks for the way they treated Jewish children. Why specifically against the rock? Explained the Mefarshim, because they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, the place where we have the Evin Shasia. Therefore, they deserve this punishment on the rock. The Pasuk says, B'nei Tzion, Hayukarim, Hamusoloim B'poz. My Musoloim B'poz. What does it mean that they were Musoloim B'poz? Ilayim Adaham B'mahach B'pizah. If you'll say that they were adorned with paws, paws is the most expensive gold. Varmidabe Rav Shila, Tarti Maskali Istri Paz and the Chisbalma. Two Istra of paws came to the world. Chadav Rome and Chadav Kul Alma. Half went to Rome and half the rest of the world shared. So it couldn't be that the people in Eretz Yisrael were adorned with paws. Says the Gemara, El Shoye Meganin has a paws biyofyam. They put paws to shame. They were even more beautiful than paws. Says the Gemara, Mikara, Chshiva de Rumi, originally the noblemen of Rumi, having the cult of Bilyoyin de Gushpunka Misham Sayu. They would have images drawn on their rings, which they would look at when they had relations. Mikar ve'elech, afterwards, after they conquered Eretz Yisrael, Ma'isa b'nei Yisrael, they would bring Jewish children, v'sirib carry the parayu, and they would tie them to the legs of the bed, u'mishamshi, and like that they would have relations. Omle, a terrible curse that came upon us. Omle chad l'chavrei, one Jewish boy who had been subjected to this terrible situation was speaking to his friend, ho'echek siva, and he asked him, where does it say in the Torah this terrible punishment? Amalei, so he said, because the pasuk says, "Gam kol choyli v'komaka ashlei kosa b'tayra azeh." This pasuk that speaks about even worse things that we could imagine will happen at the, this is a pasuk at the end of Techacha. That's what this refers to. Amar kama mechikne meduch deploy. How far am I away from learning that pasuk? Amalei ingit posto palga, a small amount, a page and a half, a column and a half. Amalei, so he said to him, "In matoy l'gabe, had I already learned the pasuk myself, lo yitzrichalei, I would understand that that's what this pasuk refers to. Certainly, this terrible punishment that we're being subjected to, that's what this pasuk means." Says the Gemara, "Amr Rav Yehuda Mishmul Mishum Rav Shimon Megamliel, May Diksev." The pasuk says, "Einenei Olo Nafshi Mechol Benois Iri, I cry from all the daughters of my city." Says the Gemara, "Abba Mayas Matik Nisias Hayv Prach Beter." There were 400 synagogues in Beitar. "Ob Kalach Svach Hayv Abba Mayas Mlamit Tanaikus." Every one of them had 400 teachers of children. "Ob Kalach Svach Hayv Lefonav Abba Mayas Tanaikus Shabes Rabim." Each teacher taught 400 students. "Ukshayayev Nichnas Lasham." And when the enemy entered into Beitar, "Hayidayk Rosa Bechatreim." The students tried to stab the enemy with their sticks. However, ukshigavar ayev lochtam, when the enemy prevailed and captured them, karchem b'sefreim, they wrapped them in their sfarim v'tzisu ba'esh and set them on fire. Mefarshim ask, how is it possible that they had a situation where each teacher taught 400 talmidim? The Gemara says in Masechta Baba Basra that we're supposed to have, a teacher should not really have more than 25 students. So how did it happen that they had all these students? So in fact, I did see some Farshim that suggest that this might have been the reason that they were so punished, because they didn't devote enough resources to Jewish education. They had one Rebbe teaching 400 students. But another pshat is that it wasn't that they taught them all at one time. They had shifts, and they only taught smaller groups at a time. Another pshat that I saw is that perhaps the main teacher was the teacher of 400 students, but he had assistants and associates who helped him out to give the students the proper attention. Says the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Maisa Rabbi Yeshua Bechananya Shaholach L'Krach Godel Shabaroimi. He once came to a city in Rome, Amrloi, and they told him, Tina Echad Yesh Bebeis Surim, there was a Jewish boy in jail, Yifei Anayim, beautiful eyes, Tavroi, very good looking, Ksoysa Sudur Lev Tatalim, his hair is a very well arranged. Holach V'Omar Al Pesach Beis Asur. So he went and he stood at the doorway of the prison. Omar, and he started the beginning of the Pasuk. The Pasuk in Yeshayo, Minosan L'Meshiso Yaakov Ul Yisrael L'Boizazim. Onuk Oysetinik for Omar, he completed the Pasuk. Haloi Shemza Chatanu Loi, V'Loi Ova B'Durach of Haloich, we sinned against Hashem, we didn't go in His ways, V'Loshemana B'Tarosai. Omar, so when he heard this happen, Muftachani by Shemara Rabbi Yisrael, I'm sure there's going to be a great leader in Klal Yisrael. So Mefarshim ask, because this poor boy was able to complete the second half of the Pasuk, does that prove that he's going to be such a great leader? So one pshat that they say is that because he saw him dressed and so well put together, even when he is in a situation, in such a terrible situation, that he's in jail, he still he had his composure and he didn't let himself get fazed. That is the mark of a Jewish leader, that is able to withstand all type of situations. Hamasha explains, however, because Masha says what was puzzling to Rabbi Yeshua B'Chananya was, why did the pasuk change from the word Meshisa to the word Boizazim? So he explains that there are two types of mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs sichlius, the mitzvahs that we understand have to be fulfilled, and the mitzvahs that we do because Hashem told us. And that's what he was saying. We sinned against Hashem, and we went against the mitzvahs that tell us to follow the ways of Hashem. Those are the mitzvahs sichlius. And furthermore, for Lashama B'Tarasai, we did not listen to the mitzvahs that are the chukim, the mitzvahs that we don't understand. Another pshat that I saw is that we know, we've discussed many times, there's a rule, Kimlei B'Midrabimenei. We don't give two punishments. And the question that he was asking this child was that Klal Yisrael was getting killed and their money was being plundered. Isn't that Kimlei B'Midrabimenei? And why are we subject to two punishments at the same time? Answer the child that we know that the halach is, we don't say kimlei b'drabimenei if the two punishments don't come at the same time. And that's what the child said. One is for chaton uloi, for our own sins. And the other is v'loi shamu b'tarasai, that our father sinned and we sinned, and therefore we're getting two separate punishments that didn't come at the same time of doing an Aveira. Another pshat that I saw is that we know that the Gemara says in Masech the Yuma that there are Aveiros ben Adam l'makoyim and there are Aveiros ben Adam l'chaveroi. Aveiros ben Adam l'makoyim Yom Kippur can forgive. Aveiros ben Adam l'chaveroi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yom Kippur don't forgive unless one person forgives the other person. And that's what he was saying. We sinned against Hashem, the sins of Ben Adam L'Makayim, but those sins are sins that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can forgive. But then there was also we didn't follow the ways of Hashem, we didn't act properly, Ben Adam L'Chaveroi, those sins HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot forgive, as we've been explaining indeed that the entire Churban Bayis Sheni happened because of sinas chinam, because they didn't treat each other properly. Another pshat that I saw is that this person was a child. He certainly had not sinned. However, the mark of a Jewish leader is that even when he gives mussar and tells people that they did something wrong, even if it doesn't apply to him directly, he doesn't exclude himself. On the contrary, he includes himself together with the rest of the people. And that's what happened here. He said, "Aloi Hashem zuchatanu loy." He included himself, that he too had sinned against Hashem. So Rabbi Shua ben Hanani saw that this is a person, when he speaks, he doesn't exclude himself. On the contrary, he includes himself. That is the mark of a Jewish leader. And he says, that's why he said, "Muftuchani boy, Shemara Rabbi Yisrael," he will be a leader. And because of that, Havaydai, he made a shvua, Sheni zoz mikan, ad shaftan b'chamam and shepaskam alav, I will redeem him no matter what price they ask of him. And Amru, lo yzoz misham, ad shepadam imam and harbe, he taka did not leave until it cost him a lot of money to ransom him, and it didn't take a long time, until he became a leader amongst Klai Yisrael, or Manu, who are we referring to, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. So Mepharshim asks, Tosfos already asks, how could have he made a shvua that he's going to spend whatever it takes? How does he know what it's going to take? They may come up with some exorbitant price that he really cannot afford. So how could he have made the shvua? So the Mepharshim explained, Ben Yoyod explains, what he had made up was that he would not leave the city until this person would, this child would be ransomed. And nobody from Eretz, and he was in Rome, his place was in Eretz Yisrael. Certainly the people from Eretz Yisrael wanted their leader, Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, to return to them under all circumstances. And that's why he was sure that they would come up with a way to ransom this child. But then Tosfos asks, we just learned the Gemara on Daf Mem Hei, that we're not allowed to ransom someone who's in prison, Yoisim Mechrei Domov, more than his value. So how could he make a statement that whatever the price is, he will pay? So some Rishonim indeed suggest, Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya disagrees with that opinion we learned in the Mishnah on Daf Mem Hei. However, the others say that if it's in a situation of sakonis nefashis, which certainly this was the case here, we're allowed to spend more than kedei domov. Another pshat is that since this child, Rav Shua ben Hananya, identified him as a person that's going to be a great leader amongst Klal Yisrael, for Talmud Chacham, we're allowed to spend whatever it takes. Some suggest more than that. Some suggest that not only for a Talmud Chacham, but here, for a Talmud Chacham perhaps, we should not be allowed to spend Yois Mechdei Domov. But here we're talking about a person who has the potential of becoming a Talmud Chacham. A person who has the potential of becoming a Talmud Chacham, and if we're going to leave him in jail, he won't be able to develop to become that great Talmud Chacham. That's why here specifically, we have to spend all the funds necessary to redeem him. And then the Mepharshim explained that really we have to see every situation. In certain situations, by ransoming at a great price, at exorbitant price, people kidnapped, it could cause that the people will not, cause that people will be kidnapped more. There, as we learned in Daf Mem Hei, we should avoid ransoming. But here we're in a time of the Churban, where the Romans were subjugating, as we've been learning for the last number of shiurim, the terrible tsaros that Klal Yisrael were undergoing. This really wouldn't have made a difference if we will or we won't, what we'll pay. Under those circumstances, the din of Ein Paidim Yois Mechdei Domov doesn't apply. And in fact, I saw Rabbi Yoshev suggest, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein quotes his father-in-law Rabbi Yoshev, suggesting that perhaps that's why nowadays, we're not taking stands on current events, but we find that Israeli soldiers alive soldiers, or sometimes even not live soldiers, are ransomed for hundreds of terrorists, and what is the understanding of this? Is it permissible api halacha? And he suggests, since they're going to try, Rachman al-Utslan, to capture our Jewish soldiers under all circumstances, our giving them a large ransom doesn't serve as is not what's encouraging them. It's not what gives them an incentive to capture Jewish soldiers. They don't need an incentive. They don't need an encouragement to do that, unfortunately, to Jewish soldiers. And therefore, all price may be paid to ransom Jewish soldiers. Amr Yehuda, Amr Rav. There was a situation where the son and daughter of Ishma ben Elisha were captured by two people. And one day these two people met with each other. One said, I have a servant that there's nobody as beautiful him in the entire world. I have a maid that there's nobody that surpasses her in her beauty. Amru. So they came up with a plan. Bob and Nassim Zelazer, let's get married one to the other. And we'll divide the children. So they took him into a room. Zay Yashbekar and Zavazer. One of them sat in this corner. The Zay Yashbekar and Zavazer. And the other sat in the other corner. Zay Mani Koyin Ben Kahanim Gedoylim. Esav Shivcha. One says, I am the Koyin, the descendant of Kahanim Gedoylim, how could I marry a maid? The Zaisamaris, Ani Kahanis Bas Kahanim Gedoylim, Esel Evid, I, who am a descendant of Kahanim Gedoylim, I'm going to marry an Evid. Or Bacha Kalalila, so they sat each in their own corner, crying all night. Kimin Sha'ola Marashacha, as day broke, Higiruzeh, one, they recognized each other, for Nafluzel Zeh, and they fell on each other, for Go, Bibichia, and they cried at Yotz Nishmasim until they expired. Explain the Mefarshim. As we learned in the previous incident, the greatness of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, and because Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha was such a great person, that's why he was zoichet to have children that were so careful about who they were. So ask the Ben Yoyada, if these two children, these two people ultimately recognized each other as brother sister, so why didn't they just remain together and not die? So he says the fact that they were sold, he became an Eved, and she became a Shivcha, which was something so terribly, terribly disturbing to them that they could not survive that status. Amar Shlokish, Maisha B'Isha Achas. There was this episode with one woman, Utsofnas Bas Peniel Shema. Tsofnas, why was her name Tsofnas? She called Tsofim Biofia. Everybody looked at her beauty. Bas Peniel, Bitoi, Shekoin Godl, Shishim Shlufnei Lufnim. She was a daughter of the Koin Godl who did the avoid in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Shispala Bas Shivoi Kolalaila. Her captor abused her entire night. Lamacha Bisha Shiva Chalukim. The next day he put on her seven garments. Vetzi Lamacha, and he took her out to sell her. Bo Adam Echachoy Mechui Biyoiser. A person who was exceedingly ugly came and Amaloi and said to him, Harenius Yofia, show me her beauty. Amaloi, Reka, you empty person. If you want to buy or pay, I could assure you there's no one more beautiful than her. Amaloi, but then he said to him, Afrikain, still, show me. Hivshita Shisha Chalukim, so she took off six of those garments. Oshvi Karasa for Nispal Shabaifa. The seventh garment she ripped off and rolled in the dust. Amulfon of Rebellious Loyalim. Imalainu Lachasta. If you don't have Rachmanus on us, Al Kedusha Shimcha Godl Lamalai Sachas, don't you have Rachmanus on your name? Valea Kun Yimio. Bas Ami Chigri Sak for Salshi Beifer. Evil Yachra Siloch. Mispe Tamrurim. It doesn't say upon the people will come the Shoided. On both of us. On us and on Kaviyachal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kaviyachal alive Alech HaShoided. HaKadosh Baruch Hu suffers along with Klal Yisrael in this terrible galus. Amr Yehuda Amarav. Maidik Siv. V'ishku Gevru Ubeisoi v'ish u'nachlosoy. Ma'is v'ad ha'mechot sh'nosn eina b'ishas rabba. There was somebody who wanted his boss's wife. V'shul yidanagri havi. He was a carpenter's apprentice. Pam achas hutzuk rabba luvois. One time, his employer needed to borrow money. Amrloi, so he said to him, shager ishtucha etzli, send your wife to me, velvena, and I'll lend you money. So first he asked, why would he have even agreed to send his wife? So the Ben Yoyada gives two pshatim. One pshat is, he said to him, you're my boss, and if I'm going to come to want to ask you to repay the loan, I'm always going to be embarrassed, because how could I approach my employer with such a request? Therefore, I'm asking you that you send your wife, and from her, since she's not my employer, I will not be embarrassed to ask for, I will not be embarrassed to ask for my money back. Another pshat, as we've learned, the nichsim alug that a husband has really belong to the wife. So he says, if I'm lending you money, I want the nichsim alug to be put up as collateral, and the real owner of the nichsim alug are your wife, and therefore I want she should be the one to borrow the money. Shige eshte etzloi sham eshloi shiyamim. So he sent his wife, and they spent 3 days together. Kadam batzloi. So the owner comes, the boss comes and asks him, Amaloi, ishti shigati l'cha heichen hi, where's my wife? Amaloi, ani bateyati l'altar. I sent her away right away as soon as I gave her the money. However, shamati shetinoikis nesala babaderach. I heard that she had inappropriate relations with the boys on the way. Amaloi, so the owner asked him, ma'esa, what should I do? Amaloi, emata shmeil atzasi, the apprentice said, if you listen to my advice, girsha, divorce her. And as the Mefarshim explained, since it was boys, children, who she had this inappropriate relationship with, at least that's what he was telling her, so she cannot be considered an anusa, a woman who was violated, and therefore she's entitled to a ksuba payment. Also, since he was saying that it was young boys who had acted inappropriately with her, he was, so to speak, saying it would be difficult for you to really find out what happened. Ha'amaloi, however, he said, ani alva amaloi ksubas maruba. So the boss says, I would want to divorce her, however, the ksuba that I will have to pay, she has a very large, I have a very large ksuba commitment that I can't pay. Amaloi, ani alvecha, I'll lend you the money, but tell her ksuba, and pay off her ksuba. So some paiskim say, from here we see that one may not divorce his wife unless he pays out the ksuba. He can't say, I'll divorce you and I'll pay you the ksuba when I have the money. However, there are paiskim that say we can't bring a raya from this gemara. Some paiskim say the reason we can't bring a raya from this gemara is because this gemara is an agadah to gemara, and we don't bring rayas lahalocha from agadah to gemara. Pesach Tshuva quotes paiskim to disagree. There's no reason not to learn halacha from Agadatop. So they say that certainly, perhaps, one could divorce his wife even without paying out the ksuba. However, if that's the case, he has to continue supporting her until he pays her the ksuba. And he didn't want to have to be in that situation to continue supporting her. And that's why he wanted to be able to pay out the ksuba. L'halacha, I saw that the Paiskim can make the following distinction. If there's a psak bezdin, the Bezdin said that this couple should get divorced, but the husband can't afford at this time to pay the ksuba, then the halacha is that they get divorced and he pays the ksuba as he can. If on the other hand there is no psak Bezdin requiring them to get divorced, then the divorce cannot be considered, should not be given until he pays the ksuba. So the apprentice tells his boss, Ani avech v'ten la ksubasa. Amazav gersha. So he divorced her. Halachu v'nasa. Now the apprentice goes and marries him. Kivin shegiyas man of lehayla paray. And now it comes time to pay off that loan, and he doesn't have the ability to. Amalei ba'av asay mi b'kayvcha. Work for me, and like that you'll be able to pay off your debt. V'yoheim yoshev oichem v'shoysim. The apprentice and this person's former wife were eating and sitting and drinking. V'hu hayo oimen amashkeleim. And he was serving them. V'hayo demayis noshes me'enov. And tears were rolling down from his eyes. for Neiflis B'Kaseim falling into their cups. What a terrible situation that he was put into. And that was the time where their seal, the fate was sealed to have the Churban Abayis. Ramilay and others say, what happened here was the adultery that committed by the apprentice and his wife, that's what caused the Churban Habayis. So we learned in the Mishnah, Lokach min Asurikin. If somebody bought land from a Asurikin, that means, as we learned in the Mishnah, that Asurikin were people who people were afraid of, that would kill them. So if somebody gives his property to a Asurikin, and then somebody else buys that property. So we learned in the Mishnah, there's a difference how what the order was. That if I purchased the property from the Asurikin, but if I went first to the true owner and got his consent, and then I went to the Asurikin, the sale is not considered a valid sale. For we say, two explanations we learned. One is, we say that the person is scared of the Asurikin, and that's why he's consenting, not because he really wants the consent. He's only doing it out of fear of the Asurikin, or because the person thinks, I'd rather go to the entire person, the Jew, who's buying the property from the Asurikin, with the Asurikin himself, I can't prevail in court. On this says Rav, that if I went to the true owner of the property before I went to the Asurikin, and all the true prop owner told me was, go make a kinyan chazaka in the field, that doesn't show that he really meant, that he really is consenting. Av b'shtar, if he sold it to me, he wrote it in a document, that is a proof that kana, that he really gave his full consent. V'shmul amar, av b'shtar namalai kana, even if he put it into a document, that isn't a proof that he's really consenting, unless he also includes responsibility, that he accepts responsibility, that he agrees to compensate the purchaser if something should happen, that the field is taken away from me, the buyer. So the Pasha Peshat in the Gemara, the Mefarshim explained in the Machlokes Rav and Shmuel, is that according to Shmuel, a chrayis is not automatically written into a shtar. A chrayis lav tar cipher. So only if he wrote the achrayis, that's the proof that he really means it. Rav, however, says that achrayis is automatically included in the shtar, whether it's written into it or not written into it. And therefore, the achrayis can't be the proof. The shtar itself alone is a proof. However, many Rishonim disagree with this pshat, because we know that achrayis is really always automatically included in the shtar. And therefore, they explain, only if he went to the bother of writing the achrayis, is it a proof that he really means it, even if it would have had achrayis anyway. But if he didn't write achrayis, that's not a proof that he really means it, and therefore Shmuel says it's not considered consent. Says the Gemara, Tani Kavasu de Shmuel. There's a brayis that corroborates Shmuel's opinion. Shimon Lozaimer. Similarly, we learned in the Mishnah that the halacha is that somebody buys a field for someone else, and he wants the wife to forgive her ksuba lien that she has on that property. So the Mishnah said, Lokach min isha, if first he got the wife to consent, v'chazav lokach min ish, then mechakayim. It's proof that she really means it. However, if he first bought from an ish, v'chazav lokach min isha, and only after that did the wife consent, we say mechabato, that it, she really didn't mean it. She only wrote it because she wanted to make her husband happy, unless so we see that the only proof that somebody really means to consent is if they wrote a chrayis into the shtar. Clearly, Shmuel's opinion, name it to have it to yiftid Rav, isn't this price a clear refutation of Rav's opinion that all you need is a shtar? Amalach Rav, my chrayis nami. What does a chrayis mean? A chrayis means shtar. And as the Mefarshim explained, as we said a moment ago, because according to Rav, every shtar automatically includes a chrayis. So when we say shtar, it's synonymous with saying a chrayis. Tana Rabbanan, lokach min asurikin. If somebody bought property from a asurikin, v'ocha shalosh shanim b'fnei balim. We know, as we said in the Mishnah, that if somebody buys property from the asurikin, he's supposed to give the owner, the true owner, a reviyah. We'll learn soon at the end of the shir what does the reviyah mean. So if somebody bought property from a Asurikin, and then he had it for 3 years We know that the Gemara says Masechta Basra, Perek Cheskes Habatim, that if somebody's on a property for 3 years and the owner didn't protest and he says, I bought it from you, even though normally by me just saying that I bought a property without being able to prove that I actually bought the property, that's not adequate proof that I now own it. But if I was on the property for 3 years and the owner did not protest, so now I have a chazaka. So here too, if I bought a property from a sekriket, and for 3 years the true owner didn't say anything, and then chazra machal acher, and then I go and I sell the property to someone else, ein lebalim alakeach sheniklum. The true owners cannot come and say to the second owner that I never paid their revir to them. So Mefarshim point out that this halacha is not only in the case of our Gemara, where the first buyer was on the property for 3 years, and then the second buyer took over, bought it. But even if the first owner was not there for 3 years, but the second buyer was on it for 3 years, the same thing would apply. The Rishonim also asks that the Gemara says that the entire concept of chazaka that we just described only applies between a seller and a buyer. But now when we're dealing with gazlonim, and here we're speaking about sekriken, so how do the dinim of chazaka apply? So Mefarshim say this is a case of a regular case, because the revia that I own is between the original Jewish owner and me, the Jewish buyer, and that is a regular situation of chazaka. Ask the Gemara, hey chidami, exactly what is the case that this brisa is referring to? If the second owner tells the original owner that the first owner paid you for the revia that you were entitled to, so I feel a rishonami. So if the first owner purchaser would have made that claim, given that he was on the property, as we just explained, for 3 years with a chazaka, and given that, as we explained, as far as the revia is concerned, it's a regular chazaka situation, he too should believe. However, if they're not clearly claiming that they paid the revia, so then I feel sheni namiloi, then even the second owner should not have a right. Certainly, if you don't claim that you paid the revia, you're not entitled to remain on the property. Answers the Gemara, Amar of Sheshes Loilam Deloi Katonalei. We're referring to a situation where the second person did not make that claim. However, even though normally there's an opinion that says we don't make claims on behalf of people that don't raise the claims themselves, here we can be sure, we could safely be assumed that the first purchaser paid, and therefore we make the claim on his behalf. Vidach, however, if the first purchaser is on the land, Iton, if he makes the claim that he paid, and given that he has the 3 years of a chazaka backing him up in, he will prevail. Eloiton, but if he doesn't make the claim on his own behalf, loy, we don't make the claim on his behalf. Tan Rabbon, says the Gemara in the Braisa, Habo Machmas Choiv. If a Jew takes a Jew's property because he says that the Jew owes him the money, or Machmas Aparis, or if he takes it without any reason, Eimam Shem Sekriken, the din of Sekriken doesn't apply. And as Rashi explains, the din of Sekriken is only in a situation where really when I give up my property to the person who I'm afraid is going to kill me, so as we learned at the beginning of the sugya, Tluy V'Zovin Zvin Zivin, really it's considered a full-fledged sale. It's only Chazal that instituted, as we learned and will learn, the din of Sekriken, that I have to give the real owner a revia, and that the real owner has first rights of taking back, of purchasing back the property. However, in this case, it really never became vampirus. And continues the Braisa, vampirus atzmai tzrich shetisha shnei masachodish. It has to have 12 months. Because as we learned in the Mishnah, by Sekriken, after 12 months, if the original owner didn't buy the property from the Sekriken, then anybody has the right to buy the property. Ask the Gemara, but by Empirus we said the dinim of Sekriken we just finished explaining don't apply. So the 12-month din is not a din by Empirus, it's only by Sekriken. V'amrit ein ba mishum Sekriken.
Says the Gemara, Hachkama. Sekrikin atzmon. By sekrikin, that somebody else should have the right to buy the property, he only has that right. Tzricha shetisha yid beis chaydish. He has to wait for 12 months until then that. Otherwise, he doesn't have the right to buy the property. Amar Rav Yosef. Netinan en aparis bebovel. There is no din of aparis bebovel. Ask the Gemara. We see that people take away property in Bavel, then they without legitimacy. How can we say there is no empires? Says the Gemara, "Ema ain't din empires with Bavel. There is no rule of empires. The din of empires don't apply to Bavel and Bavel. My Tama, why not? Kivin dikubei daver. Since there is a court to go to, and if somebody takes my property, so I should go to court and sue him. The lawyer also kabel." If I don't go and complain and sue him, Eima achule achel amaychel. However, there's a machlokes rishonim in a case that if an empiris took property from Reuven and then sold it to Shimon, the halacha is, as we're saying now, ein empiris, the halacha is that Shimon has to return it to Reuven. However, there's a machlokes rishonim as before giving the field, before returning the field, does the buyer have to, can he demand that the person who the field was stolen from compensate him for the money that he laid out to buy the field? Rashi says that this is a case of Avriach Harim Sechaveri. All I did was help my friend by getting this empiris off. And the Gemara says in Masechta Bava Kama that I don't, Mavriach Arima Nichse Chaveroi does not have the right to claim payment. Tosfos disagrees. Because Tosfos says the case of Mavriach Arima Nichse Chaveroi is only before the Ari approached my friend's field. But in a situation such as ours, where the Ampyrus is already on the field, and I bought it from him, so I did a favor on behalf of my friend, and there the halacha is that it's not just Mavriach Arima Nichse Chaveroi and I can claim compensation. Says the Gemara, Gidl Bari'ili Kibel Ara B'Taksa V'Dei Baga. The way that we try to explain this Gemara is as follows. There used to be a bunch of fields together, and these people who had their fields together would pay taxes. One person left, and now they would be responsible for his share of the taxes. So they went and gave his field over to Gidl Bar Eli with the understanding that he'll pay the tax assessment. He went and paid tax, prepaid taxes for 3 years. After 1 year, the original owners came back. The first year that you paid taxes on our behalf, you also ate the produce from the field, so it's a fair deal. We're going to now take back our field, we'll pay our taxes, and we should get our produce. But Gidl Bar Eli says, I went back, I paid 2 more years. And as Mepharshim explained, the rule was that the person who was on the field was the person that paid taxes. So now Gidl Bar Eli is leaving the field, and the original owners are going back to the field. So the money that he paid for taxes remains with the government, and new taxes will have to be paid by these new people. So he claimed that I should get back my tax money. So he thought that the other people who had brought him into the field should have to compensate him for the taxes that he prepaid. You're creating a situation as a sekrikin situation. But as we just explained in the previous Gemara, only in the specific case of sekrikin did Chazal establish the sekrikin rule. Any other case is not considered sekrikin. Ella Omer Afuna, and therefore, he doesn't deserve that protection. Ella Omer Afuna Bered Yeshua, he niach ma'isva karen atzvi, and he loses out. Zu Mishnah Rishonah, says the Gemara, this is the original Mishnah. Bezdin Shachreim Amru, Halakeich Min Asrikikin, if somebody buys property from the Sakrikin, Nois Labalm Revia. He gives a Revia. Now the question is, how do we evaluate that Revia? Amra, Revia Bakak or Revia Bemaz. Which means is, 1/4, it means 1/4 of the purchase price.
He pays one quarter of the total value of the land, which is equal to one third of the money, which means that according to Rav, the discount that a Sakrikin usually gives is a quarter of the payment, which equals one fifth of the total value of the land. And according to Shmuel, a Sakrikin sells land for three quarters of its real value. And therefore, for example, if the land is worth 4 mas, the Sakrikin will sell for 3 mas, and then the purchaser has to pay one mana, one quarter of the land's value to the owner. But my kumifugi, the machlokes that we just explained, is ma'asava nichi reviyazavit. Shmuel holds that a Sakrikin sells land for a quarter less than its true worth, or ma'asava nichi chumshazavit, whereas Rav holds that he sells it for a fifth less than its worth. Meisvei zu mishnah rishayna. We learned this is the original Mishnah. Bezin shalchreim aymer, halakech min a Sakrikin, noisim lebalim reviya, v'yad balim al yoyna. The balim always have the upper hand. Rots makakim maitlim, they could get their payment from land. Rotsman Mosnach could get it from money. Amosai, when is this din? Bizman Shaim Biyodin Likach, when the real owners can't afford to pay for the land. Av Yesh Biyodin Likach, if they have the ability to pay for the land, hang Kaidim Kaladim, they come first. Rabbi Hoshe Bezdin, the Ninush, Mshas, Vifnei Sakrikim, Shnei Sakhidish, that if the Sakrikim are holding it for 12 months, then the true owners lose their claim. Then the Loch is Kala Kaidim Likach Saka. Whoever wants to buy, buys. However, I'm nice and about Reviv Kaka Reviv Mois. They have to give Reviv Kaka Reviv Mois. So clearly, it contradicts Shmuel, who says here in the Brisa, it says one quarter in the money. The Brisa implies that it pays one quarter of the payment, which is a fifth, which is not like Shmuel, who says that he pays one quarter of the value of the land. What he means to say is, after the owner has received payment, the total of the payment made to the Sakrikin and to the owner is the equal of the total value of the land. So when the price is a quarter of money, it means a quarter of the land's total value, which is actually the opinion of Shmuel.